Subdivisions always come to the planning commission. And we don't do very many full subdivisions, they're mostly land partitions. Or replats. Replats we can do administratively. And that before I came back to the county, I know the county planning commission said home occupation permits, the planning commission wants to see those. They're, I think we've done most of them really great, and a few of them might not be so great and cause a lot of headaches, and it just does make a lot of sense to have them in front of the planning commission. Like hardship, I'll go to the planning commission.
That's another one that I didn't include on the slideshow, but the hardship provisions.
Do those all go to planning commission?
So the way that our code has it now, it doesn't exactly say. Because it says, when considering a request for special use, the planning commission will use a specific criteria to balance, blah, 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 blah. So technically, yes, like the way our
because
code has it written.
It implies
that it goes to the planning commission, but we haven't processed them that way, and there's no reason why we really would. So the way that I've changed it would allow the planning director
to do a
medical hardship through an administrative process.
So a medical hardship might be a second dwelling on a piece of property with limited terms.
Thank you for bringing that up. That's in the memo, but it's not in the slideshow.
Okay. All right. I stumped you.
You stumped
maybe
me.
Not.
Yeah. So the temporary hardship variances provision, that's another bit that we've included in there.
In administrative?
Administrative, yeah.
Okay. Daisy covered a lot. I think her slideshow made it go a lot easier. And we can go line by line. And I think also included in your packet were comments from a couple of different entities.
Yeah, we received a lot of comments from different... We wanted to make sure that this process, especially because of what we discussed, that our code doesn't really conceptualize large-scale industrial development. And so we brought in some of our large-scale industrial developers that we work with all the time, UEC, the Port, AWS, Roland Green Data Center, like a lot of these developers that we know will be impacted by these changes, and we invited them into the discussion to say, you know, what do you think of this? And they brought up a lot of really fantastic stuff that we hadn't considered before, or things that, you know, just made it work really well. Aline did an amazing job of really just like going thoroughly through it and bringing up
And all those are in your packet, except the one from the Port came late, and
yes,
that was on your table, I think, when you got here. Did you get that?
Is that what this, when it was, these are the comments that they provided.
Yeah. Oh, I'll just make copies of those.
Okay, that'd be awesome.
We didn't get that.
Oh, okay.
We didn't get that.
Yeah.
Then the Port comments, and then just the Port was
The AWS one was in an email.
Yeah.
In an email.
With the packet.
Yeah, not in the packet though.
Okay. Not, yeah, I don't know that we printed up for the packet. It's a thickie, so.
Yeah.
Saving trees. But here's a copy of this.
21st. If you're looking for your email. Okay.
Yeah. We didn't incorporate all of the like developer suggested revisions, but I think they're all worth discussing. They're all definitely have merit and worth bringing to the table. I want to make sure that the planning commission has a thorough understanding of how these issues are being discussed and kind of where those issues lie and what impacts they might have on development. Thank you.
Oh, did you have them also, Michaela?
No, I just got the copy that you had here.
Thank you. Yeah, and then a lot of the discussion that we've had around these discussions with developers has been around the Article 4 and separating out the site plan review process from the zoning permit process. And I brought this up earlier, but our two options were to kind of like make them two separate processes, and we review like everything under site plan review, and then or everything under zoning permit. And I think the way that it works best is to have this broad site plan review process where we look at the overview of these subjective criteria, and we send it out for notice. We discuss the things that require that interpretation or discretion. And then when they come in for their zoning permit, we can do it under clear objective standards. We know exactly what we're looking for, and they're able to just check the boxes. So that's where we've landed on that. And there's, I think there is still wordsmithing to be done about, like, water services, will serve letters, and how that plays into this two-step process. So, for example, I've gone into that already. I don't think we need to delve into it more, but that's where a lot of the discussion has oriented.
So it was a lot to cover. Are there any particular items you want more detail on? And I know we have several people on the phone, and David from AWS is here. They've got their favorite parts that they want to comment on.
Mm-hmm. Might as well jump in and let them start.
No more. Are there any questions from commissioners on the Zoom?
It looks like Commissioner
John?
Kilkenny
did we lose John?
Is out.
Oh. Did he go away? Okay.
Do we want to start in the room? Do you have?
Yep, chair will do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The chair.
You can go ahead if you'd like to sit up here. And let us know who you are.
Yes. I'm David Almanero. I'm here to represent Amazon Web Services. And so, yes, first of all, I'd like to thank you for the invite to speak. And I'd like to thank the planning staff for all the time they've kind of given since like November to into this with us. So thank you. So I think what we're really interested in, we tried to state in the letter, and that's our three main objectives here. One, just to implement some clear and objective standards, which kind of Daisy captured those clear and objective definitions. We want definitions in the code that for industrial development that 10 people, if they read what our development is and they compare it to the standards, 10 people will come up with the same solution or same conclusion about those. So we're looking for clear and objective standards in industrial areas. We're looking to kind of reduce redundant steps. Daisy mentioned a few of them. And we're looking to just kind of safeguard the planning staff's decisions by just helping to make sure that the Morrow County Code is compliant with state law. So that's if our whole big packet. That's just kind of what we've sought to achieve. We left out what Daisy kind of identified as the big one that the industrial developers, including ourselves, have focused on, which is the 4.165 and 4.166 changes. Those are kind of going to be larger scale to try to figure out what makes sense to the Planning Commission and what the Planning Commission wants to see out of the standards implemented, and how we could look at those and make those objective, clear and objective. Again, clear and objective just being kind of a state-defined term where, I love what Daisy said, so I'm going to just say it again. 10 people looking at it all are forced to come up with the same conclusion because the standards are that clear. So we would like to continue working with the Planning Commission. Working sessions like these, we'd like to continue working with the planning staff, and we'll be kind of outside of that working with other industrial developers, Daisy named a few that are in this area, to really bring something forward to this commission that is clear and objective and focuses on 4.165, 4.166. Are there any questions about the letter, specific issues I wrote about in there, or just kind of Amazon development in general that I can answer?
Chair, I have a question.
Yes.
Is there any specific language that Daisy included in the packet that you would want to change? Or is the language in the packet acceptable?
Yeah, so I think we'd want a lot of changes to 4.165 and 4.166 in the packet. I think those are... so one thing that brings up kind of a broader issue that I see with that packet, and that's the state defines clear and objective or standards. Again, 10 people will come to the same conclusion, or subjective standards that require discretion. And what we see is when we, or what the state requires is that when you have one or the other, you have to go through a certain process. And so what this draft tries to do is 4.165 tries to kind of sort out all the clear and objective standards, and 4.166 tries to sort out all the subjective standards requiring discretion. And so what we would like to propose is just a set of standards, a single permit, and we can identify which ones are clear and objective in the code and which ones are subjective. And from there, define, well, if you're doing a development that meets all these clear and objective standards, then we issue this permit. And if your development has meets certain criteria that mean we need subjective or discretionary decisions, that we will go through this other process defined by the state. But there's no real reason to separate out those two things. And by separating those two things out, we kind of get into weird situation. So if we look at 4.165 and 4.166, which, let me find that page number.
31-ish.
Yes, perfect, thank you. So 4.166, subsection D, about midway through the page on 34, we see applicability. And so this is just what we can think of as the triggers that would put a development into that subjective review or administrative process. So something like an application a development is within the flood hazard overlay zone, number 6. And so then if something's in the flood hazard overlay zone, what do they have to do? That means they have to go through the site plan review and go through all the review criteria, page 35, section E, the review criteria. And these review criteria are not necessarily tied to this being in a flood overlay zone. It's things like water is or will be available to the site at a quantity or quality adequate for the proposed use. That doesn't have anything to do with the flood overlay zone. Applicants' proposed plan for sewage disposal, wastewater management, etc. That doesn't have anything to do with the floodplain. We have to go all the way to number 5 to find, the subjective criteria that applies to the floodplain. So in other words, by splitting it up the way this draft, this proposal does, which is, very thorough revision, and very good in other ways, we kind of get ourselves into weird situations. Again, we can look at back to page 34, same example, developments within the airport safety and compatibility zone. But what does that have to do with any of those criteria on the next page with about water use, wastewater use, the transportation system? They don't have anything to do with that. So we're kind of mismatched about the triggers that bring us in to 4.166 and then what we're asking to get reviewed in 4.166. So that's a specific piece of feedback, and that's a big thing to unwrap, and that's why we didn't provide any specific red lines on it. I think for that one, we will need more engagement with the planning staff at that level and then to bring a plan to you. But what I'd really love is for the Planning Commission to consider how we're kind of artificially sorting these things, and we're getting into weird situations because of the way we're artificially sorting these triggers. Are there any questions on that?
I do for Tamara. Tamara, from your point of view, can you explain how that process works with it?
Yeah, I'm actually just clarifying with Dan Kearns. So you can't be part ministerial and part administrative. You're either all or you're nothing. The other option that Planning Commission discussed, and I think Commissioner Killian, you raised it, was why aren't some of these large developments conditional uses where the impacts are so large
they're clearly urban scale developments outside of city limits. We met the development community halfway by saying, we'll keep those in the list with a use with standards. But that means your whole project is subject to site plan review, not just a part. So one piece of it will probably trigger the whole process. And I'm pretty sure Dan is pretty solid on that issue.
I think before I have any response, I think I would like to hear what Dan had to say.
Yeah, okay. And he's not here. That's just what he's told us in other meetings. So let me see if he's at another hearing, but he said the text or something comes out. It might take some time to get to him.
Well, we don't need to make a decision on it tonight, right?
Or no,
it's just a work session, so
don't know. Yeah, I mean, I think obviously just because something's in the floodplain doesn't mean you need to meet the requirement that the transportation system provides for the blah blah blah, blah. Like. And maybe that needs some more wordsmithing to make it clear that only the applicable criteria would be applied. But the point being that just because something triggers a specific administrative review, that means the whole application has to go through the administrative review process, right? So
I just want to be clear that it's not just industrial. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, this shouldn't be just catered to one
totally.
Quite kind of permit.
That's right.
Right. So, yeah. Like, if a person has the same problem, but they trigger these, but the industry doesn't.
Right. That's right.
So I just want to make sure that it's across the board. Yeah. You know, whatever we do isn't just catering to one.
Yeah. But yeah. The one more common, and that's a really good point, and appreciate that, because equity of application is always at the forefront of our mind. I'm looking at Landon with his recent floodplain training. I'm wondering if some floodplain overlay standards are clear, because there are very clear height limits. I'm not certain that floodplain overlay zone would require administrative review for a person who's mm-hmm. choosing to build a house in a floodplain and they can meet all those boxes. There's not a lot, and it's, I don't know how many, 8 pages, 10 pages long, our floodplain hazard overlay zone.
It's pretty lengthy.
And it's you know, been vetted by FEMA and by the state of Oregon, so that one might not be. But if they want a variance from that, yeah, that would clearly be an administrative review.
I agree with that. I think that it was moved to administrative because of the way that it had been prior included, like, or currently it's included in the zoning permit, the ministerial section that it's in compliance with the floodplain overlay. I don't remember which one it is. But the way that I rectified that was to... And maybe that's something that we do need to look at, separating out the overlay zones as their own approval process, because it doesn't necessarily trigger these more substantive submittal requirements. So.
Yeah. So here's Dan's response. It said, that makes no sense. An application is subject to state land use process, and state law does not recognize the segregation of parts of an application being subject to the process and other parts not. The procedural vehicle is the, quote, application, unquote, not some element of a permit application.
And just to be clear, what we are not proposing is separating half the application ministerial and half of it administrative. That, again, doesn't make a ton of sense, but we're saying we can achieve this same thing where certain developments that trigger certain criteria can go through an administrative process without necessarily having a 4.165 and a 4.166. And I think some of these things I've tried to point out would kind of go away if we approach this issue slightly differently and let the Planning Commission policy drive what the process is. And if the Planning Commission policy is to have subjective criteria involved, then that triggers the administrative process for the whole application. First the policy, first separating it into process, and then having it's just a little weird things happen again, like I tried to point out.
I think rather than, oh, Chair, if I might.
Rather than talking in the abstract, could you share a specific example of one of the criteria that you would prefer not to be subject to administrative review?
Yes, so you think those different overlays, you know, having not being tied to the review criteria, not being tied to the trigger, makes for some weird things. And so, like I said, floodplain needing to do a trip, a traffic analysis doesn't make sense to me. Right now, a homeowner building in a floodplain would have to do a trip generation estimate as part of their submittal requirement.
But, well, it's a trip generation estimate for a single family home is just 90 cars. It's a,
why are we putting them through that?
It's just a box on the application. It's not putting them through anything.
We do, you don't. It's okay. It's pretty straightforward.
Okay. So that's a specific thing. Another thing is we have a trip generation estimate. And so let's, you know, for data centers, for the thing I do, I'll stick to that. And that triggers, again, if I have more trips, what does that have to do with my sewage disposal or my, compliance with wastewater management? I mean, that's the trip generation should be tied to the traffic analysis.
But I think the alternative, David. I can't. Sorry.
No, you're good.
I think the alternative
for free flow of conversations
until it gets out of hand. Yeah, bang your gavel. Okay.
Yeah. I understand where you're coming from. I think maybe that the alternative process would look like anything that is outside of a very narrow box of on-site septic exempt well. Anything outside of that very narrow box would go to administrative review. And I don't see a way to get around that without having these more broad categories.
And also, one of the issues, like Daisy talked about Goal 11. We've talked a lot about Goal 11. I even copied the whole darn thing for you today in oversized. And we can talk about it more just because my printer was on this. But the if clearly an application meets one of those triggers that Daisy, I think, really nicely outlined, it calls into it's probably pretty clearly an urban use. And again, you're fitting an urban use into a rural code. And we're not unique in this regard. When you come out to the rural areas, we thought we were approving farm dwellings and maybe a sawmill, you know, back in the 80s. And that's not what we're approving now. So it triggers it. So why not share that information? Again, our standard review is, if you're a house, you're a residential property, you want a house, we know you qualify for an exempt well, and that's on you to drill the exempt well. If you're a data center, you're not drilling an exempt well. You need a commercial or industrial water right and permit. And how are you going to get it there? Is it on site? Those are things that matter, and those are things that matter because it affects adjacent property owners as well.
I absolutely agree, and I think the commission, I assume, is concerned with water use and wants to know about water use. But there's nothing, if I'm a data center that is within the UGB right now and does not generate 400 car trips a day, which we're not super far over the threshold, so a change in the way we do operations could easily be get us below that. And so what would put us in this site plan review? How would you review our water usage? So there's no water usage trigger here. It's a trip generation. That's going to be the main one for data centers. So again, if I think we're artificially, the Planning Commission, don't let me put words in your mouth. If you're not concerned about water usage or wastewater management, then let me know. But if you're concerned about that, then just say you're concerned about that and the applicability, and let us go through that process. Don't kind of hedge it in with the trip estimate. Another thing with the trip estimate.
Let's suss that out a little bit. So if you're anything other than an on-site well and an on-site septic system, that probably triggers administrative review, and we can change the language to show that. Or if you're outside an urban growth area and you're being delivered water from inside an urban growth area, we need to take a look at Goal 11. And we think you check those boxes, but
I don't, yes, the outside growth, but I don't see, if we develop right there and the Port of Morrow we would be within the UGB.
Not all the port properties in Central.
Oh, no, I know, but we would say we're developing in the UGB. I don't see anything in here that would trigger the administrative.
Can I even say something? Do we need to add that?
Sure.
Do we need to add that?
We could. I mean,
because water use in this area is a big deal, and how it's wastewater is managed. I mean, is that something we really do need to look at?
You could even say, for example, if a project has a commercial industrial wastewater system, it's out of it's industrial, and it's or it's administrative, or it's a conditional use. I mean, in other places, something like that is absolutely a conditional use, which means it's more subjective, and the development community didn't want that. So again, we felt like we were meeting them halfway, and any development wants to limit their exposure, limit those things that could be appealed and are more subjective.
Yeah, I think this is a great opportunity for us to really narrow in on what do we care about, why do we care about it, and how do we incorporate that into our code, and water is a great example of that. It's like, we care about water usage. We are not the experts on water usage. We don't need to be doing in-depth analysis of whether or not your like water right is like, you know, applicable to your, but we do need to have that broad assurance that water is available to the site at a quality and quantity that's appropriate, or however we want to word that, and however, as we want to make it as subject or as objective as possible, but we understand that there's always going to be some application of discretion or analysis that goes along with that, and so I think that's a great point for us to consider.
So the Planning Commission is concerned about water. Again, if maybe we should have that as a trigger in here, but it's not currently. And when we, to your point, Daisy, you're not an expert on water. So if we have that on a trigger in here, what are we reviewing it against? So if we bring you a plan that says, yes, we have water, which is what the port suggested, is a will serve letter. Mm-hmm. How is that not clear and objective? It's a will serve letter.
Yeah,
you either have it or you don't have it.
So this comes back to the two-step process. The will serve letter is sufficient for if we're doing it as a two-step process. The will serve letter gives us that preliminary assurance that water is not precluded to the site. It's when you get to the zoning permit then where we need to have that, we want the pipe in the ground. We want, at the very least, we want a permit in hand that says you can get the water to the site. And I think it's really easy to see that with, like, DEQ. We can say, yeah, generally, you're not precluded from having a septic system that's appropriate. We sign off on your LEX. Then we need that permit in hand. When we say, yes, you can go build it, you're good to go on your building permit, to be able to say, at the very least, you're permitted to develop that septic system. That's standard. I think that's what you see in any jurisdiction, is that we need to have some sort of mechanism for ensuring that that general proclamation that water is available is actually implemented. So I think when we were discussing it as a bifurcated, either a site plan review or a zoning permit, it got a little tricky where we don't want to just say a will serve letter just isn't sufficient for that. But when it's this two-step process of site plan review, I think it's totally appropriate to say, yeah, a will serve letter, if the port says we'll give you water, then we believe the port's going to give you water. We have no reason to doubt that. We don't have the engineering discretion to review that and verify it. And so that's fine, as long as we have that second step to confirm that the water is available on the site.
Okay, so again, we start with a policy that we're concerned with water, right? Data centers use a lot of water. This is a desert, so we start with that, data centers use, or we're concerned with water. What, is there enough water here? We bring a will serve letter. That could be a clear and objective standard. Do these data centers have, can the port serve them, yes or no? The port brings a, or we bring a letter from the port saying, yes, we can. That's a clear and objective standard. You said you don't have the engineering expertise, and I would be generally aligned. I don't have the engineering expertise to evaluate that. And so we just kind of take that at face value. We don't need to exercise discretion. And then we get to the next step in the process, however many months down the road, which is a zoning permit, and it's, is the water in place? Yes or no? It's clear and objective. So now we don't need water to be an administrative review. We have not exercised discretion the entire time. We've relied on the experts who can do it, who are not me. who are the people who are going to do it, and then we look to see, is the water actually here, yes or no, at that final step? And it is there, so there we go. So that's what I mean by when we kind of artificially separate these, we get into weird situations where we didn't apply any discretion, yet we're using a discretionary process. Does that kind of example make sense?
Chair, do you mind if I speak?
Yeah, go ahead.
I totally understand what you're saying. I get it. I totally understand it. I totally understand it. But I think we're all in the middle of a really big thing with water in our county. And so I would be curious to have a response from the port about this topic as well. I mean, just because they lately have become very close to being experts on water. So I would be curious what their opinion would be on that idea and what input they have regarding that. I mean, it's not just providing the water anymore. It's about the impacts that the water has, where it's coming from. There's a lot more to than just the engineering behind getting the water, unfortunately. I would feel more comfortable doing a little bit more research in that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Getting
absolutely.
More input on the water ideas. I have to think of a few people I'd like to talk to myself about it.
Yeah. And with this work session, and maybe before I get into it, it's not a land use action, and so there's no preclusion around, Ex parte contact, thank you. So feel free to do that research and come back with the things that you found and provide your own input on that.
So there's another example that I have that's similar to the water issue. Is traffic. And this one we did talk about specifically in our letter. And what we've kind of suggested is, how do we make traffic clear and objective? So the planning staff are experts on land. They're not experts on traffic. Again, neither am I, so not casting stones there. But the Department of Public Works, they are experts on traffic. They're experts on traffic here in this county, and the roads here in this county. And so one thing we proposed is in our letter, but not yet in the red lines in the draft form, is can we just get an agreement to mitigate our traffic completed with the Department of Public Works director, have that signed, and then bring that to the planning staff so they don't have to exercise discretion on this. Did their subject matter expert in the county agree that we were doing our part to mitigate our impact on this community, yes or no? Did the planning director sign that, yes or no?
So we can't delegate the planning director or the planning commission authority to another department. Part of the state agency coordination program requires the county planning department or the planning commission coordinate with local, state, and federal agencies. So we can't punt. But we do coordinate. That's why I'm just looking up state agency coordination. It's a state statute and lots of rules. It's true for our obligation to coordinate with state agencies as well as local agencies. So you could submit that as proof, if you will, but we don't have a local traffic expert either. That's why we have gone out and retained a traffic, even our engineer of record, Anderson and Perry, they don't have the traffic expert. So a couple of recent traffic impact reports, we've asked a third-party traffic engineer to take a look at those to see if it complies with our minimum reporting requirements and if the mitigation is appropriate. So we have an independent third party. And all of that is part of the land use permitting. In Oregon, we don't have SEPA. We don't have State Environmental Policy Act. We don't have NEPA. National Environmental Policy Act, we have state agency coordination, and there's a lot of responsibility on a local planning office. It's true in a city, and it's true in a county. So I don't think legally that's an option to just remove reference to traffic standards and defer to public works. It just doesn't work that way in Oregon.
Well, I'm not an expert on legal, so I don't want to get out of my depth here. But I do believe the Oregon State Code contemplates development agreements, and I could call on my legal and ask them to provide of how that would be accomplished, but it's definitely not through like delegation. So if we're interested in hearing that, they are on the phone, or we can punt that to another time.
For sure. But the development agreement would be a condition in the land use permit. So as consolidated as Oregon gets, it revolves around your land use permit. So if you were proposing a development agreement in lieu of traffic mitigation, you'd still need the TIA. And whatever your consultant was recommending, you could come up with a mitigation agreement or a development agreement. And again, it would be a condition on the land use permit. I, for better or for worse, we carry a lot of the responsibility as part of the land use review.
Understand that.
And development agreements are fairly common for large projects. Yeah. But again, that's part of our process, not independent of it.
One thing I would want to add to the discussion, I think this is a great discussion. It will definitely help us, think more deeply about the way that we're wording these requirements and triggers. But one thing I want to add is that, LUBA cases have held this up too, is that discretion isn't just about like literacy, right? It's not just about being able to read that it says this and say, yes, it says this, right? It's about that deeper level of analysis and public comment, right? It's about the ability for people to challenge what you've submitted and say, I don't think that's right, or that doesn't seem accurate, or to say, you know what, your TIA looks really great, but there's this other thing you're not considering, or the port says they can provide water, but I don't know, like whatever additional aspect about it we're not considering. It's not just about being able to read the words that say we're good to go. It's about that depth of investigation that requires professional discretion, and that, frankly, you're not going to want to hear this, but that like the public process is a part of like fleshing that out. And I don't know. I mean, I think that's an important note too. That I don't think everything can be clear and objective.
Well, are we interested in hearing the kind of how we could get a development agreement in place, or is that kind of too in-depth for this?
That's kind of in the weeds. I think we're still looking at the standards and what triggers a site plan review. The Planning Commission has looked at plenty of development agreements. That development agreement would be subject to administrative review. There's nothing about a development agreement that's clear and objective, and I can't recite those LUBA cases off the top of my head. I'm sure Dan could. I've lived that firsthand, not in this county, but mitigation for a truck stop was a condition of approval. County staff approved it. That got appealed. LUBA said, county staff, that has to go to your planning commission or for a review.
As I started with, you've given us plenty of opportunities to work with you, and so I think if we can get into the weeds and the details and work that out with Dan and stuff, you'll give us plenty of opportunities to do that. So I'm fine not covering that.
Yeah, okay. And I don't mean to just be disputing it. It just, your points, this is good for the Planning Commission to vet. We've been having this conversation since November. So, about different aspects of it. Did you have any more examples, or do you have other people signed up to talk? Did you have other specific examples?
No, I'm just trying to give some large examples to show that we should spend some more brain sweat on 4.165 and 4.166, and kind of these are the types of issues that come up, and it's not intended to be exhaustive. That's why we didn't kind of submit we didn't submit anything. If you look at our packet, we don't even touch 4.165 and 166, but we did kind of end our letter saying we want to look at that. So I'm ready to go back to some working sessions, kind of planning staff and industry, and again, I appreciate the opportunities you've given us to do that so far. Are there any questions for me before I sit back in the other chair?
Right. You don't have to sit in the other chair, but I don't think so, and it doesn't look like there's anybody online raising their hand online.
I have a question for I guess everybody. Should we, as the Planning Commission, be looking closer at those 4.165 and 4.9 so we have a better understanding? Is there something we need to do research-wise to understand what we're talking about?
Yeah, we can.